Before we start today's episode, we've got a very exciting announcement. In May, we asked you to nominate your GoFundMe heroes, people using the GoFundMe platform to help and inspire others. This week, we finally announced our finalists, and each story is more incredible than the last. Follow along on our social accounts this week as we introduce you to these amazing changemakers. These heroes will be honored at a first-time live event this November in San Francisco called the GoFundMe Hero Celebration. And guess what? We're giving away 2 free trips for you and a friend to attend the event in person. If you're feeling lucky, head over to the GoFundMe Instagram page to learn more and to enter. Good luck, and we hope to see you there. Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I am your host, Kelsey Little. In each episode, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives, or has had their life changed by someone kind. Earlier this summer, Johnny Altrogi conquered an incredible feat. He biked the entire 2,700 miles of the Great Divide Trail, which runs from Banff, Canada to Antelope Wells, New Mexico. While this accomplishment is incredible all on its own, Johnny's motivation for it was to inspire young kids of color and help them see that the outdoors is for everyone. Hello to all of our listeners out there. I'm here in New York City, back at Gotham Podcast Studio, one of my favorite studios to record in. I'm so excited to be here today with the very awesome Johnny Altrogi. Johnny, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, and good job.
Thanks. We were getting his name pronunciation right. I said it right first, and then I said it wrong the second time, so nailed it.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. We were talking a little bit before this, so you live in New York City now, but you didn't grow up here. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town called Indiana, Pennsylvania. Nice. Which is kind of confusing. But the town of Indiana was founded before the state of, so I always say they stole our name. But it's like an hour outside of Pittsburgh.
Nice.
And so that's where I grew up, yeah. And I lived here in New York for about 7 years.
Okay, cool. What made you come out here?
Work. So I started, after college, I went to work for Voyager Outward Bound Schools out in Minnesota.
Nice.
Where we run all kinds of backcountry expeditions. So I was an intern there for my first summer out of college. And then after my internship was up, I realized I didn't have any work lined up and was kind of like, oh, damn, what do I do? So New York was just kind of a spot that was hiring. For Outward Bound, so I came to work for Outward Bound here, and I've kind of stayed, more or less. Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you love most about living in New York?
That's a big question. I think what I love the most is just the immense diversity of life. My hometown is kind of the opposite of New York City, and especially in terms of diversity, both in people and things to do, and food, and whatever else. And I never really knew that I was someone who really needed that for my well-being and my soul. So when I first came to New York, there was definitely some dissonance in like trying to figure out how to fit into this world after having come from a very small town, Western PA world. But now I think the thing that keeps me here the most is the diversity of life that I get to be surrounded by and learn from.
That's awesome. I've asked a few New York people that same question, and I get that answer a lot.
So yeah.
It does seem like a really magical thing about the city.
Yeah,
that's
totally
awesome.
Is.
So before we dive into the main part of your story, I'd just like to hear a little bit more about you.
Sure.
Who are you in a nutshell? How'd you describe yourself?
I, in a nutshell, am a lot of things, I think. So I am a musician. I love the outdoors. I have a very eclectic family, and I'm trying to be as active as a role in that family as I can. So I was adopted at a very young age, and have a really good relationship with my biological mother and her family and her kids, who are my half-siblings, and the family who I grew up with in Pittsburgh, who's my family. And we're kind of spread out around the country a little bit. And so I play this weird role between being grew up being the youngest in a family of 5, and then biologically I'm the oldest. And so I play this weird kind of youngest-oldest thing. Dual role, But other than that, yeah, I love, like I said, I love music. I love hanging out with friends and drinking whiskey and finding good corner whiskey bars.
Oh my gosh. You
mentioned
talk about that later.
Mad Men earlier, something like that. Like that dark kind of bar feel. Yes. I love that about New York City.
Are you more of a scotch or bourbon person?
Oh, bourbon for sure.
Same.
Yeah.
That is the right answer.
Forever. That's the right answer. I mean, nailed it.
Everyone can like what they want, but bourbon just tastes so much better than scotch.
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Cool. Well, so as you say on your campaign, for the past 6 years, you've been working with students and primarily students of color in the outdoors to help them realize they are capable of great things. I'd love to hear more about that concept and what exactly you do with these kids.
Yeah, totally. So for New York City Hour Bound Schools, we work primarily with New York City public schools. And our overall mission in a nutshell is to work with these students and change their lives, but then also change the way their schools work. So we work with developing the curriculum. And then my primary role currently is a course director and an instructor as well for the programs. We take these students upstate and run 3 to 5 day backpacking trips.
Nice.
Where we get to teach them things about teamwork and communication and leadership skills and self-reliance and responsibility and a lot of these kind of life skills that you don't really get to focus on typically in the public school system. So for the past 6 years, working for them, I've had the privilege and opportunity to work with this student population and learn from them and kind of like connect and teach what I can through working in the wilderness and using the woods as our classroom.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's really awesome seeing like these kids who come out, and you know, a lot of these students might not have been out of New York City or maybe not even out of their borough before.
Wow.
And then their first trip out is with Hour Bound in the woods and trying to ask them to hike up a mountain, you know, or climb the ropes course or whatever it might be. And almost always, the majority of students really don't want to be there first day.
Really?
And because it's so like, it's so out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know? It's like in the woods is something they see in their movies or they see in you know, horror films or whatever it might be. And, you know, then by the end of the trip, a lot of them are like content with what they've done.
Wow.
Or sometimes they don't want to leave and don't necessarily want to go back to the challenges they have at home.
Yeah.
So it can be a really challenging job and really, really hard, and it's exhausting, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're on pretty hardcore from starting right about now till the end of Thanksgiving. We're just...
Wow. How often do you guys do the outings?
We'll do maybe like 8 this fall.
Wow.
8 or 9, something like that.
Nice.
And then the spring, it changes up a little bit, but yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know more about how you guys incorporate the learning and mentorship aspect into the outdoor activities and experience that you guys pick for them.
Can you say more to that?
Yeah. So, so I think you mentioned on your campaign that like being outdoors and experiencing the wilderness can have like a more profound effect than just like getting kids into wilderness. Like you guys try and, help them like realize their dreams and more about themselves in a deeper sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of it is we really focus on, you know, two things that I would bring up in this conversation would be like we have an emphasis on challenging students and them challenging themselves and choosing their challenge and like what it is for them, whether that's like, you know, we talk about climbing like either it's a rock wall or a high ropes challenge course, and whatever their challenge is for them, we really push them to get to that challenge and then maybe go past a little bit.
Nice.
And so that's a really big emphasis is like asking students to challenge themselves and challenge each other and help each other and support each other through that challenge. And then we also really focus on fostering a sense of belonging with our students.
Nice.
Each one of our students in our schools, we have a network of schools in the city, are part of what's called a crew. And it's kind of like their inner school social group. And in that crew, they work on team building and they'll be it kind of varies, but they'll be with that one group of students for either their entire middle school or their entire high school.
Wow.
Some of the schools are like just 1 year with that one group. And then they meet, you know, either every day or 3 days a week or
maybe once a week. That's a lot, even if it's just a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea is like, you know, fostering a sense of belonging first in the woods in this really challenging atmosphere, and then taking that sense and kind of going back to their school structure a little stronger.
That's really
both
cool.
Both as humans and as a group. So, yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's like the main thing that you hope the kids take away from those outdoor experiences and think about later?
I think a few things. And that's kind of been changing as well as I've like shifted roles in the organization from being like an assistant instructor to now being a director of those courses and programs. I hope that students leave that program feeling like, you know, if I could conquer that challenge of the wilderness, which I never thought I could, then I can conquer XYZ at home.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel a little stronger to go do these other things. And now I think more what I've been thinking about a lot in the last year and a half, is I hope that our students have that feeling and then also have a sense of, you know, going out to the woods is not that bad. And I learned a lot about myself.
Yeah.
And maybe how can I do that more in the future? Or understand that that's a better option for them, or that's an option for them at all, you know, to be able to do that and have a sense of that it's also a lot easier to do so. I feel like a lot of people who are, like, locked in this city grid, whether it's New York or Chicago or San Diego or wherever else, have the sense of it's really hard to get out of that city. And it's not that true.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty easy, actually, to do so.
Yeah.
So I think that's also something that I would like our students to take away, is an idea that I can do these things on my own or with my friends. Yeah, and grow more on our own.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that. So something you mentioned on your GoFundMe campaign as well is that the outdoor industry and wilderness exploration in general is primarily dominated by white people, and I would love if you could elaborate on that and why that's an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's again, something that's been on my head for a long time, and it's the deeper and deeper and more I think about it, the more complicated it kind of becomes in my head. Both personally and, you know, doing a lot of research and learning a lot of things. But my journey in thinking about that started first with just me personally experiencing the outdoors and going through a lot of, like, tokenism in a lot of the spheres that I was in. Let me back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So when I grew up in Indiana, Pennsylvania, I grew up in a very, like, small bubble. Our town's a small bubble. There's a university there that's a pretty diverse place, but other than that, it's like 95% white people.
Yeah.
And I was very used to that. I grew up in that space and was used to that, but had such a support bubble in my family and the church that that wasn't really a huge thing that I noticed. I definitely experienced some like overt racism and a lot of daily microaggressions, but as a kid, you don't really recognize that as a thing, you know, especially when you don't really have like support of other black people around you, people of color, who can kind of help guide you as a young kid in that. So when I first moved out of my town and started working in other places of the country, it started to become a lot more evident to me that I was noticed everywhere, like 100%. So working out there, and then I came to New York for a brief stint, my first stint, and was kind of like shocked, and then very quickly went and worked with the ski patrol up in Vermont. Which was really fun, and I had like a good group of dudes who I was really good friends with. But even more so there than in Minnesota, I was like, I was the black guy on the mountain.
Wow.
You know, like everybody knew who I was, and my uniforms would happen to be all black as well. So I was just like the black blob everywhere. And I was pretty used to that, you know, growing up that way, and so it didn't really bother me as a human. But I started to realize that there was this like disconnect between outdoor recreation and what that might mean for whoever that might be, and who was like belonging in that space. So what the typical narrative of who belonged in that space was.
Right.
And so as I kept going on and on and on and doing personal trips and working for Outward Bound in places and going back to Minnesota and traveling abroad, realized first on my own that I was typically the only person of color in these spheres, in these spaces, and then the reactions I would get in those spaces, whether it was positive or surprise, was like the most common ones. Like, oh, we don't normally see you out here. Good to see ya. You know, maybe that was the response, and that's great, but... and then as I noticed that more, I decided to like get more interested. And as I worked with the students in New York City, the other side of that coin started to show its face as well, where a lot of my students who were from the Bronx or Brooklyn or Manhattan or wherever it might be, were saying things like namaste, black people don't climb rocks, or like we don't go hiking.
Wow.
Or like that space is not for us, or like we don't belong there.
Oh my gosh.
And I had gone through such a, like, the wilderness and the woods had helped me, like, become me a lot. And I feel like in this conversation, I'm a little privileged in the sense that I didn't have the same barriers to the outdoors that a lot of people of color do. And so thinking about the sense that the wilderness and outdoor recreation has been primarily, like, dominated both in the media and in actuality,
yeah,
or in the visual presentation by white people, and then thinking about what the barriers to access for people of color. I kind of lost my train of thought, but
no, answering it perfectly. Well, thank you for elaborating on that. And I mean, it must just, as an outdoor enthusiast in general, and then you having thought about all these access issues, just hearing kids say stuff like that they've like inherently learned just because of things that they've seen, that they feel like they can't go hiking, or, you know, that must just be heartbreaking for someone who loves the outdoors as much as you do, little bit, right?
Yeah.
Just to hear them automatically be like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting or fun to like hear them say that, and then... Something I love about New York City Outward Bound is that we're pretty diverse staff as well. And so I hear them say that and be like, look at us. You know, like we're all here.
Yeah.
You know, and like that means you can be too.
Yeah.
Partially.
Nice. You know? So I'm really excited then to get into the main part of this story. So you noticed all these things and you've been doing these excursions with the kids for so long, and you, because you ask your students to push themselves and try new things, you wanted to lead by example and push yourself to do something new and big. So you planned a huge solo excursion for this summer, which you just completed a few weeks ago. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
We talked about maybe me meeting you halfway, which I'm really sad wasn't able to happen.
That would
have been awesome.
Yeah.
But first of all, I'd love to hear about the route that you chose and why.
Yeah. So the Great Divide mountain bike route is like an established route that starts in, well, recently it was extended to Jasper, but starts in Banff, Canada, goes through British Columbia, Montana, Idaho for a section, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico,
wow,
and ends at the border of Mexico. And it's there's a race that happens along the route. Every year, and the race is pretty intense, and I didn't race it.
Yeah.
Not this time. Maybe next time. Who knows?
So slackerish.
I know, right? Such a slacker. So it's a predetermined route.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people do it. It's follows the CDT, the Continental Divide Trail, as much as possible. So I think it crosses, I'm going to get this number wrong, but like 26 times across the Continental Divide.
Wow.
So it kind of waves back and forth over this this line that goes down.
That's crazy.
The Continental Divide, yeah.
And so the distance between Banff and New Mexico, did you mention is 2,700 miles?
Yeah.
That's what you rode on your bicycle?
That's what I rode on my bicycle.
I can't even imagine riding 100 miles on a bike, so that is an incredible feat. Was there anything that made you choose that trail specifically?
I don't know what it was. So when I first moved out to Minnesota, there was some people who I really looked up to who had done these really big trips. Specifically, a man I've learned a lot from named Dan Blessing, who rode a canoe a very long way. That's a different story. But hearing his talk about his trip really inspired me to want to do something like really big, like these men and women who I really admired. And I loved riding my bike already. And something, I don't remember what it was, but something about riding my bike down the Connell Divide sounded epic.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So it kind of, it was lodged in my head for maybe 6 years, 7 years
nice.
Now.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that. Like, you just kind of keep it in the back of your mind, and when the opportunity presents itself, you're like, now.
And it comes to fruition.
Yes.
Yeah.
It makes it even more like cinematic when you've been thinking about it for so long, and you're there, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. So I want to hear about the trip, but then I'm just curious, did you pick cycling for any specific reason as opposed to some other outdoor activity like a hike or something like you do most of the time with the kids?
Yeah. I think I chose cycling because something like a hike is already in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Something on water is in my comfort zone. So biking, although it's like I love riding my bike and do so, already did so a lot already, doing so in like expedition format was way different.
Yeah.
I've never done that before.
Nice.
Yeah, bike packing is what it's called.
Yeah.
Which, so I learned a lot about the whole process, you
oh my
know,
gosh.
Of course. And so, Yeah.
Okay, so trip details. I have so many questions.
Sure.
So you started in Banff, Canada.
Yep.
So that's where is that in relation to like the top of the U.S. maybe? Where does it sit?
Yeah, so it's like, so in Canada, it's about 2 hours west of Calgary.
Okay.
And then about 300 miles north of the border of Montana.
Okay.
Like northwest
nice.
Montana, yeah.
I've always wanted to go to Banff. I've seen pictures of the national.
Beautiful.
Oh my gosh, it's
surreal.
Gorgeous.
Seems even when you're there, it seems fake.
Yeah,
you know, it's crazy.
This isn't real.
Right.
So did you fly from New York there like with your bike? How does that work?
No, me, my girlfriend, and a few other friends drove from the city here.
Oh wow!
And then road tripped it to through Pittsburgh, my hometown, outside of Pittsburgh, and. And then went to the Badlands and then went up to Yellowstone and then kept driving up to Banff.
That's awesome.
And yeah. So we rented a minivan and tossed the bike in the back and all of our camping gear and went out and did it.
That's even better.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So what was your official start date when you headed out on the trail?
June 22nd.
Okay.
I believe.
Was there an official starting point that you – is there like a start to that trail, like a specific – pinpointed place?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Yeah, it's, so it's in the town of Banff. There's like a really iconic hotel called the Fairmont Hotel, I believe.
Okay.
I think it's called. Don't necessarily quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. And in the parking lot behind the Fairmont is just like a trailhead, typical trail that people from the hotel run or bike on. And then the ACA, the American Cycling Association, I'm pretty sure that's what it stands for, started there in, I think, 1993 and wanted to develop this bike route. And they just linked route to trail to small road to trail to road the
wow.
whole way down. And so it's like this – it's not one long trail. It's like a collection of roads and turns
wow.
and whatever else. So it starts there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So real quick, could you like describe the surroundings that there were – like when you were – I want to know what the surroundings were like, and I would love to know, like, what was going through your mind as you were about to set off.
Yeah. So, surroundings, the Fairmont Hotel is, like, this beautiful, big, stone, castle-looking hotel. It's, like, iconic-looking, and it's crazy. And then, in Banff, you're constantly surrounded by mountains. Like, constantly. It's, like... I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of the Tetons or been to the Tetons. It's like the Tetons, but constantly around you all the time. So it's this really magical, big feeling and beautiful pine trees. And the day before, we had driven from Jasper to Banff, which are pretty close to each other. And we went over the pass, and there was a blizzard on like June 21st.
What?
A blizzard. And there was a car pileup on the road, and so we were stuck in this blizzard for like 6 hours.
It's like a horrible omen to the start.
Oh my gosh, right?
Oh
and,
my gosh.
And the whole time in my head, and I was driving the car too, and the whole time in my head, I'm thinking like, I'm riding my bike tomorrow. Like I'm starting this thing. So that was strange. And we were there for so long that, like, we pulled our cooking gear out and, like, made dinner. And but the next day was beautiful. Like,
oh, wow.
Such a switch. It was blue skies, sunshine. It was supposed to be raining or snowing or something like that. And it was not that.
Wow.
And so went from really bad omens to really good omens.
Yeah.
So that was the start. And said goodbye to my girlfriend and my friends. And bit of an emotional moment. And
yeah.
In that moment, it started to all kind of sink in, like what it was I was about to go do, you know?
Yeah.
Can I curse on this podcast?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, like, my first thought was like, fuck.
I would have the same crazy first thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, I think in that first 20 miles or so, you're listening to Volcano Choir.
I don't think so.
You know who Bon Iver is?
Oh, I've heard that. Yes, I have heard them. Yeah, yeah.
I listened to one of his songs, and it, like, all hit me, and I started to, like, cry a little bit.
Yeah.
But not in, like, oh, no, I'm going to die cry. Yeah. Just, like, holy shit,
yeah,
kind of cry.
Peak,
you know?
Experience kind of crying. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, mounds around you.
Oh,
and
gosh.
You had this huge thing ahead of you, and yeah.
I love that. That is very cinematic, like, how I see it in my head. I'm sure it felt the same way.
It did. Yeah.
So how was the first day then? Because that's always another thing with trips like this. You're like, you have this big moment and you feel it and you have the motion rush, and then you're like 10 hours in, you're like,
Yeah.
What was the first day like?
Yeah, first day was definitely a roller coaster and lots of ups and downs, literally and not literally. But I think around mile 20, 22, right before I had that moment I just spoke about, I also had a moment of like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
This is dumb. I can quit. I can turn around. All my friends are like not that far away. Yeah. I can call them, then come back and pick me up, and I'll do it another time or something. But I ate some food and then like sat down for a little bit and kept pedaling, and then had that kind of like, oh shit, it's happening, yeah, moment. And then like after mile 30, my body started to lock up, like my legs started to cramp, and
oh my gosh.
Which is a pretty bad sign, pretty, like that early on is like, no. I got lots to go. So I ended kind of early that night, earlier than I wanted to. I didn't make it over this pass I was trying to get past.
Okay.
And camped in this really beautiful campsite and got there kind of early, and had some time just to like sit and like look at the mountains around me and journal and write a little bit. And I had a GoPro with me and take some GoPro
nice
videos. And I think it was a lot of like acceptance of like, all right, this, here we go. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
Better get used to my life now.
Yeah.
You know?
So for a bike trip like this, you do camp along the way then?
Yeah. I was primarily in my tent.
Okay.
For the most part.
How do you carry all the necessary gear with you on a bike? That seems like a lot.
Good question. Yeah, good question. So there's like a bunch of different ways to do it, and I won't talk about all the ways, but my way was, so my handlebar, I have like a dry bag tube,
okay,
kept everything dry inside, and then in that tube, I had my sleeping bag, my tent, my sleeping pad, and a few extra stuff kind of like tucked in. In the frame, kind of like between my legs, it's a pack that kind of fit perfectly in my little the way my bike was shaped.
Okay.
And in that, I kept my food and my stove, and that was it primarily. And then there's a pack that comes off my saddle where I sit, and it kind of like sways a little bit when I'm riding a little back and forth, but that held my clothes primarily.
Okay.
And then I carried a small backpack. Not everybody does. In my backpack, I had like my rain gear, med kit, and some extra water.
Nice.
So that's the gist. So you're not carrying a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my husband's like a big backpacker. I am not. I did one overnight trip in the Narrows.
Nice.
In Zion. And I carried probably like the lightest backpack full of stuff in the world. And I was like, this is too much. So I'm impressed by any amount of backpacking that anybody does.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know more about what you personally love about being in the wilderness. Like, what kind of feeling do you get from being in nature, exploring some place new?
Yeah. Man, all kinds of feelings. I'm one who, like, my biggest need is freedom. Like, I need to feel like I'm in control of my life and, like, I can go do whatever I want at any time. So my first feeling when I'm in the wilderness or in the woods is, like, I'm free. You're like, I can go anywhere and I feel comfortable here. I think, secondly, like, especially living in a big city, the serenity and quietness that you can get, or, like, the loudness that the woods can be,
yeah,
you know, is can be really magical and can really fuel all kinds of awesome thoughts, or can make you scared and can really challenge you. And I like the feeling of, yes, I'm kind of in control and I have freedom, but at the same time, like, nature can do anything to you,
yeah,
and you're not ready for it, you know? It can be, like, sunny, and then suddenly you got hail in your face, and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And I think the woods is, like, one of the very few places that doesn't judge you for who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and I spent a lot of my life, like, trying to fit into these different categories for different people. Either I was, like, too white for black people or too black for white people and didn't know where I fit and where I fell. And finding that the wilderness and the woods and nature is the only place I could find that didn't think that about me, didn't put me into a category, didn't place me someplace. And I didn't have to pretend or act to be the certain way or
That's beautiful. So what were some of the other places you rode through along the way? I know it was, like, a long trip, and I would like to know about every city, but it'd probably take a long time. Maybe some highlights, and also, did you come across any cool wildlife? Because I love animals.
Yeah, me too. Let's see. I'll talk about wildlife first. So, like, grizzlies is the big talk, right?
Oh my,
and this part of...
Think about that.
Most of the part of the country I was in, countries, I guess, is, like, grizzly land. So Canada, grizzly land, Montana, Wyoming... so I was fully prepared to, like, have, yeah, I had bear mace. I lost both my canisters along the way. Well, I bought one and then bought one. Yeah. Whole thing. But, and I didn't see any grizzlies, which is both fortunate and I felt a little cheated. I was like, I was told I was going to see some grizzlies,
oh my God.
But I'm glad I didn't. But at the same time, it's part of me that kind of wished I did.
Yeah.
I had so many people stop me coming, like, in their cars and be like, hey man, there's grizzlies around the corner. Like, be careful, there's mom and cubs.
Ooh.
And I get around the corner, nothing.
They left. Oh, man, that sucks.
but I saw some moose.
Nice.
There was one part where, I think it was day one or day two, I was, for a good 10 miles, following these moose prints on the side. Like, moose got massive prints,
yeah,
so you know what it is. And as I'm following these moose prints, and I could tell they're fresh, like, from today. And then after a while, they started to be overlapped with grizzly prints. And so then the narrative in my head is like, this grizzly stalking this moose. And I know probably at that time of year, the grizzly's going for moose calves, the baby moose.
Oh, God.
And so, like, I'm just expecting to, like, pop up at something. Like, moose is down, grizzly's going crazy.
Oh my God.
Who knows? And I was went around a corner, went downhill real fast, looked to my right, saw the moose that I'd been following this whole time. Didn't see the grizzly, but I knew he was nearby someplace.
Oh, my God.
So that was kind of a crazy thing. I saw a lynx, which is really cool. Kind of, like, very elusively, just, like, he passed by in front of me, and then I saw him off to the left, and that was pretty cool. That was kind of primarily it. Coyotes.
Nice.
Pine marten, which are really cool.
What's that?
Pine marten is kind of like a tree ferret.
Oh.
They're pretty vicious.
Oh.
They're really cool. They're maybe like, let's see, like 3 feet long maybe, and narrow bodies and kind of like otters in the trees.
Yeah.
You know, they're really cool. And they're also really rare to see. They're pretty like,
yeah,
pretty elusive. Yeah,
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, you should look them up.
How about just sights wise? Like, was there anything? I mean, it's hard to describe nature without pictures, I guess.
Yeah.
Just, like, it's so beautiful. Was there anything that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, so most of the route's pretty mountainous, and
okay,
it's really beautiful mountains, and, you know, how do you describe, like, the beauty of mountains?
Right.
And the Tetons are pretty incredible, because it's just, like, it's flat, 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 massive mountain, flat,
yeah,
flat, 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 flat. And I was able to spend some time in the Tetons. I have some friends that live there, and
nice,
they picked me up on the trail and took me back to. And they didn't have their apartment anymore, so we just kept camping anyways.
Oh, cool.
And That was pretty cool. The thing that stood out to me the most, and I think that I loved the most, was the big open flatness of like southern Wyoming, southern New Mexico. There's something really special and magical about like the heaviness of the sky on top of you and like being able to see your same little dirt path 40 miles up there and know that's where you're going. And yeah, and then like either if you're sunset riding or sunrise riding, and it's just something about it's like this redness that comes across the whole landscape, and it's like dirty and dusty, and there's like there's like cactus, and something just so magical about that.
I agree. I love that kind of landscape also.
Yeah.
So the finish line was in New Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to ride 2,700 miles?
Yeah, it took me 40 days.
And damn.
I had 4 rest days in there because I didn't really have like a really tight time schedule.
Yeah.
So I was able to go a little casually. So I ended up averaging about 75 to 80 miles a day.
That is so impressive.
Which felt pretty good. So like the small days would be like 50 miles. The big days would be like 140. So average out like 75, 80. So yeah, it took me about 40 days.
Did you have a goal? Was that around your goal or?
It was a little under my goal.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So my goal was about, I had like a window goal, right?
Okay.
So it was 6 weeks was my fast goal.
Yeah.
And 8 weeks was like my long goal.
Okay.
And I thought realistically I'd probably hit about the 7 week mark. And I did it in a little under 6 weeks.
That's so awesome.
Which felt really good.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What emotion did you experience when you rode into Antelope Wells? Mm. Like, could you believe that you were done?
No. Yeah. I'm getting a little emotional thinking about it.
Yeah.
It was hard. It's hard to describe. It was such a feeling of accomplishment and a little sadness that it was over. You know,
definitely.
There was so much work that went into it and so much work that happened during it. And then feeling accomplished, yes, coming across it, but also wanting like more, you know, or sad that this part of the journey is coming to an end. I guess that kind of sadness is pretty typical for a lot of journeys that come to ends, you know.
Yeah.
I guess depending on the journey. But, and it's something that I'd been thinking about since day one. Not necessarily because I wanted to be done with the ride, but just the thought of finishing such a thing.
Right.
So I've been thinking about this, and probably daily it popped into my head, just like that end, that end line, what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're there. And having all the thoughts of all the people who supported you to get there and all of, you know, the drive that put you there, and then also like feeling really fortunate to be able to be there at all and experience that, kind of all hits you at once.
Yeah.
You know, and as I'm getting older, I'm becoming more of a crier.
Yeah.
I never used to be.
Same.
But yeah, that got me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why did you do this crazy long bike ride? I mean, you touched on it, but what did you hope to accomplish with this? And what do you hope people take away from hearing your story?
Yeah. I think 2 things primarily. Well, maybe 3 things. For me, it was a big personal push, a big personal challenge, and I really love challenging myself. And every time I do that or I'm challenged in any way, I grow, and that feels really good to be a growing human, you know?
Yeah.
And then primarily after that, really wanting to inspire, encourage young people of color that they can also do that. Like that's a space that's belonging to them, and not necessarily go and ride your bike for 3,000 miles, but that people like them do these things too, and that it's okay for them to get out there. And although it might still be white people's shit, it can be their shit too.
Yeah,
you know. And, you know, I listened to Michelle Obama's book recently, and she talks about the Obama effect, this idea that, you know, there was a black president, and so now young kids of color see that as an option for them. It's like, oh, man,
representation.
I can do that. Yeah. So having greater representation in the media or on your in your Instagram feed or wherever else, and saying, oh, like, people like me are doing this as well. People who look like me are doing this as well, you know. So that was a big part of it. And then something that's kind of come through it is kind of hoping that for people not of color, for white people, seeing that their narrative is also changing, or their perspective is changing, or their view of what the outdoor world is changing, and the faces that are there are now more colorful than they used to be, and why that's an important thing and why that's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so those are the basics.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you feel right now, personally, like reflecting back on this whole experience, talking about the whole thing?
I feel really good. I feel really good, and I feel kind of like the parts ahead of me are the harder parts. I think that whenever you're sharing a big part of yourself, then there's a lot of like self-doubt that comes with that. And, you know, wondering like if there's going to be acceptance, or if there's going to be pushback, or people are going to love what you're doing, or people are going to hate what you're doing. And you're probably going to get a mix of all that. But so I'm kind of having that feeling going forward. And looking back on what just happened, is I feel really proud. I feel really accomplished, and I feel like I want to still be doing it.
Yeah,
you know. And so then my other thoughts also like, all right, what's next?
Yeah. And, do you have any ideas for like a next thing?
I don't know. There's other big rides I'd like to do.
Yeah.
But then I also thought like, you know, if this is what I'm trying to get to, then do something different. Like, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Well, you should feel very proud. It's a huge accomplishment.
Thanks.
So something really cool about this trip, you raised funds on GoFundMe to cover the expenses. And I think reading back on your original campaign description, you exceeded your original goal by over $1,000.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Which is awesome. And I was going to ask, so you said you brought a GoPro with you, and you kind of documented your trip a little bit. Do you plan to share some of that with your donors or with people who helped you get there?
Yeah. So I did a presentation at a brewery outside of Pittsburgh, my hometown.
Okay.
And I had 4 hours or 5 hours worth of footage.
Oh my God.
So I was able to condense it into like a 20-minute little like mini doc.
Yeah.
So I shared it at that presentation, and it went pretty well. But I want to like tweak it and make it a little better, and then share like a really official one.
Nice.
Both with donors and the people who have been following me on Instagram and anything else. So
what was that experience like? I mean, because I just loved your campaign when I came across it, because it was just super, super unique, and just the support that you had from, was it all your friends and family, or did you know all the donors, or how did that kind of go?
Yeah, man, that was such a cool experience, such a crazy experience. I think at first it was primarily friends and family. I think the first person to donate was been like my best friend for 15 years, whatever. And then as like I started to go on and people started to share it a lot, I started to get donors of people I didn't know at all.
Nice.
That was really cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did that make you think? Like,
kind of like, oh man, this got some traction.
Yeah.
You know, and I was pretty like skeptical at first. You know, it was like, there was a lot of like, oh man, I don't know.
No, I don't know.
And my girlfriend was really one who pushed me to like really do it and go for a lot of the pieces of it. But yeah, I was like, man, I probably won't raise $1,000. And then I passed $1,000. I was like, oh man, that's cool. And I can use that, but I don't know if that's enough to actually do the whole thing. It's a pretty big endeavor. And then it just kept going and kept going. And then to the point where even on the trip, I was still getting like, hey, so-and-so you've never met donated $30.
Wow. So while you were on the trail?
I kept getting donations. People I met on the trail would go to my GoFundMe and then donate as well.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny, I just want to say congratulations on this amazing accomplishment.
Thank you.
Just thank you so much for everything you're doing to inspire others and kids. I just think the mission of what you're doing is really incredible. what is the main thing that you'd like our listeners to take away today from hearing about your trip and why you did it? What do you want to make people think about?
I think I would like to make people think, or challenge people to think about what their narratives are for whatever it might be, whether it's the outdoor industry, which is what I'm focused on, or whether it's, I don't know, but whatever people think to be true, to challenge their own biases and challenge their own thoughts. And because I'm talking about the outdoors, to challenge people to think that not only is the outdoors for everybody, but it should be for everybody, and then that should be encouraged as well. And so thinking, what can you do to help that process? And I think step one for that is like learning some more on your own, you know, listen to some good podcasts, doing some research. It's out there. All you got to do is Google it, you know, and you can learn more.
Thank you again to Johnny for chatting with me and sharing his message about how the outdoor should be for everyone. If you'd like to follow along with Johnny's adventures and see some photos from his trip, please visit his Instagram at Johnny Moses Outside. That's JONNYMOSES Outside. All one word, no spaces. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. If you were inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or review and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@gofundme.com. And lastly, for more behind-the-scenes content and inspiring stories, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe Heroes. Quick thank you to Gotham Podcast Studios in Manhattan, New York, where this episode was recorded, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more true stories of good people. Talk to you then!